Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. This is Brendan Hauser with Evoke Bike. We have an awesome episode with Sergey Svetkov today. We talk about his long history as a pro. He goes in on some training details of the difference of when he was doing 4-hour races versus 6-hour races, what happens when you race the Giro, and he definitely touches on his recent diagnosis of leukemia, where he's taking that, how he's feeling, how he's managing it. If you want to look for a specific topic, check out the chapters below. But this was just a great conversation about bikes. Sergey, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Everybody, good luck with your training and racing, and we'll talk to you soon. So let me, this is an embarrassing question to ask. So are you a Romanian citizen now?
So since 2013, I became a Romanian citizen. Yes.
Okay.
So before I was Moldavian. I was born in Moldova Republic, but back to history, whatever, you know, like ex-part of Romania, like a Romania government decided like to give away like a lot of citizenship, you know, like probably politics wise, I don't know, honestly, be honest. So I think it's like 70% of Moldavians, they have like dual citizenship, like Romanian as well.
Okay.
And pretty much all my career, like I spent in Romania just racing and like Olympic Games, all those, you know, programs is much better than Moldova it was. So, but back that time, so.
Got it. Okay. No, it clarifies because I was curious. Yeah. Had been reading your history, seeing what you've done. Obviously, you won Romanian nationals a bunch of times. So I was like, wait a minute, maybe he has dual, maybe he. Da, da, da. And yeah, so there's always good
loops. Yeah, right now it's there. Triple even, but yeah, it doesn't really matter much, you know.
So before we jump into everything, I don't want to put words in your mouth of who you are. So anybody that might not know who Sergey is, please introduce yourself.
I'm Sergey Svetkov, 35 years old. Was born in Moldova. Started cycling, and I was like 14 years old before I was a breakdancer. Pretty much like 3 years I spent in like pretty much professional breakdancer. Started 14 years old, later just, you know, start my journey in cycling, like step by step I become like a national, you know, a member of national team of Moldova, started like racing a lot to Ukraine, I think a couple times in Russia, but most of for Ukraine. And after in 2010, I moved in US. I won a green card lottery. So, and after that, just pretty much my cycling was started in US. So I think 21 years old, I moved in US. I started like racing for the small team, crit team. Later on, I moved to, you know, bigger team, XG, team XG. It was like, you know, continental team with Freddy Rodriguez, Matt Cook, mm-hmm. like some, you know, names. And step by step, yeah, I become, you know, just this job become like a job in US. So I'm a father of two kids right now. So pretty much like a week ago, I had my second kid, like, you know, and pretty much living in Colorado. So enjoying my life so far.
That's amazing. And I can cut this out if you want, but I had to die when you were like, oh, by the way, can we reschedule the podcast? I'm having a baby that day. I was like, dude, Sergey, what?
Yeah, I totally forgot because I spent like a month away, came back, and just like, I know, I just like, yeah, let's go for that date. Like, oh, I totally forgot because we were scheduled.
That is the number one reason to postpone a podcast. I was like, is he being for real right now? This is hilarious. Love it.
It was so a good news, right?
we got it. So wait, the breakdancing, professional breakdancing, was this in Romania still?
In Moldova. So in Romania.
In Moldova, sorry.
Yes. Yeah. I was like a school, whatever. I don't know. Yeah, it wasn't.
But you were getting paid to do this also?
Yeah, you know, not really, but we kind of was just dancing, you know, in clubs, which is like get paid a little bit, yes. But most we, you know, we compete even, you know, like also like in Ukraine was pretty developed, like, you know, breakdancing, like festivals and everything. And quite professional, I would say. Still, some skills.
So you slay the dance floor at like weddings and any big event here these days.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell you, it helps a lot during the crashes. So, you know, this ability to just like to jump from your height to whatever floor level, it's the same on the bike, which is like, you know, much faster. Like it's definitely those skills, it helps a lot.
That's always interesting to hear, like when there's a sport that someone has done and it crosses over a little bit to help cycling. What do you think is like a good tip for people that have not been breakdancing to like, do you think it's just your reaction time or your ability to roll that helps you in those instances?
Exactly. Is the ability to roll. The first thing is ability to roll, because I saw a lot of times in my life and experience in cycling, people like great, you know, bike riders, but as soon they hit the ground, they just break the teeth, I don't know, the face, everything. And whatever, you know, breakdancing, you always, you know, from like a top, like from the top, like from the high of your whatever, you go to down to floor, you just like, you know, group, yeah, like, you know, roll and everything. And the same thing in cycling, if I have like half second I understanding, like, okay, now it's gonna be crash, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Just even I think in YouTube somewhere, the worst crash in Thailand, in the YouTube, actually, yeah, for sure, you can find this one. So I broke my collarbone, but I was roll, and I woke up on my feet, and like, all right, I'm fine, and I was just like breakdancing, like back to my feet. But I realized like, oh, my you know, my hand just doesn't go up. I'm like, all right, something wrong.
Yeah.
Recently, like 2021, I think so. Yeah.
That's wild.
But that's perfect, like, you know, move. It was there, like, basically I crashed in a big, you know, high speed, like 500 meters to the finish line, and just like back to the to the pit.
And then you mentioned, and I had read about this in the Velo News article, that you won the lottery to come to the US. You had sort of submitted this thing, and just it was it the article correct? You kind of forgot about it. You're just like, oh, I'm going to submit this, and all of a sudden you got a call. Hey, you can go to the US.
Exactly. So basically, US has a program every year that gives away 50,000 visas, immigration visa, by lottery. So you can apply. You know, it's for free. You just apply whatever, some information, you know, date of birth, your name, and some photo, like special photo, which I remember I just like crop from some whatever, you know, normal photo, and just put and applied for that thing. And yeah, I mean, just was just for fun, because like on our TV, just like, you know, oh, you need to apply, you need to apply. Me like, all right, let's do it. There's nothing cost for me. And like next year, just like have a call like, hey, Sergey, did you apply for a green card? And you're like, I think so. Yeah, what's going on? Congrats, you won. Are you happy? But I don't know what to say. I don't really, you know, realize what could, you know, could wait me in there. So I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, let's talk about that. So that process started. I like understand. All right, time to move to US.
And so did you come by yourself?
Yeah, I did.
So what do you feel, if had you not won that lottery, where do you think you'd be right now?
It's hard to say, but I don't know. Definitely, it's, you know, I ask that question in my, you know, my mind.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, especially, you know, I'm going to say I won another lottery, probably going to, you know, we're going to talk later a bit, like it's quite a lottery, right? But yeah, I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
Ooh, that is a crazy. And so what do you feel like, you've had the ability to race with a ton of different teammates, a bunch of different teams. Like how do you, when you think back over all the years, like what are some of the standout moments of, you know, you were here, you were over in Europe. What were some of like your favorite years?
You know, be honest, every year it was some special year. Like for first year when I, you know, from the Crete team, Criterium, so was something new for me. I was
What team was that?
It's the Aerocat. It's like Abraham Emil. he was the owner of this team. Yeah, okay. Which was team which is, he did an incredible job. He teach me a lot. Like first, my races was Speed Week, which is like, what's going on? I came from Europe, like 180, 200 kilometers races. And I came here like 45 minutes, qualifications, whatever, you know, Athens. I remember Athens Speed Week, something like, wow, this is like some, I really want to retire. So by steps, step by step, you know, I won Tour of Ireland that year, 2011. You know, it was, incredible experience. It wasn't that big level like Speed Week, but still, you know, it was like 11 days, Omnium with the points. It was time trial. I won time trial. I get second on road race. That's why I gained a lot of points. And later, I was just pretty much every creator was top three, which like, all right, probably I can ride my, you know, whatever creates. So from there, like, all right, I need to move up something. And that's why I start, you know, try to find another team, bigger team.
And that's when you went to Exergy?
That's right. Yeah, I started like email to every team just like crazy, you know, it's hard. It's like different story. We can talk a lot about that. But yeah, that Exergy was one, you know, who answered to me offer, like an offer, which like I need to, you know, stop for work because I worked the same time I was a grocery, whatever, beggar, right?
Yeah.
So in Atlanta. I was for 3 years in Atlanta. I spent like 4 years, my first year in Atlanta, Alpharetta actually. So I stopped working because like I was kind of salary. I had some salary. So that was like, all right, time to get serious. And that was a good year because for me, it was a first experience with, you know, USA Pro Challenge, Champion California to a Utah Cascade. That's the biggest, you know, the biggest show in US. Yeah, that was perfect. And every year was special, right? So like end of the year of 2012, the team stopped. Like, all right, we don't have any, you know, opportunities because in November they told us like, all right, guys, your contract is right now zero, right? For 2020 or 2013. And I had a contract, almost double it. Like, oh, all right. And again, from zero, just like, you know, like little small team in California. Thanks to those guys, just like kept me, you know, like first two races, like Redlands, I think, so San Dimas, Merced Classic. And after I signed with Jelly Belly, with Danny Van Hout, which is like, yeah, start another journey with them.
You mentioned reaching out to teams and how much that's changed. What were you, go in on that a little bit, because I think it's an interesting topic. Like, how is outreach now so much different than back in 2012?
You know, the thing is, I start, you know, sending emails when I came in US, like all over. Like, it was a lot of teams, to be honest. Like, Jamis, Bissell, like a lot of teams. Like, so no one don't really answering. Like, couple, like Jelly Belly was answering, Danny Van Hout was answering first. Like, and the first question, can you race crits? Be like, all right, I don't know, probably. Okay. So it was quite hard. But after Exergy, which my name, I was like, USA Pro Challenge, it was one of the best race for me that year. I was in a breakaway with George Hincapie, with Nibali, with Peter Wales, with like big guys. And I was probably with Bajidal, that two guys was Conti teams. And I was trying to push like, hey guys, I was at that breakaway somehow, just, you know, just answer to me something. So in November, of course, like everyone was full. And like, but I noticed that more answers I get, you know, from the people, because like already my name was somewhere, you know. All right. So it was still hard, I think. I mean, doesn't change much since 2012.
And how do you link up with Androni then?
Well, I spent really great years with Jelly Belly. I finished top three, like third overall USA Pro Challenge. I was between, like, I mean, you know, Rafa Majka back in the days. He was in Tinkoff Credit System, whatever name, Walter team. Tom Danielson was second. TJ was first. I was on the podium with them. And I was just like, all right, I need to try, you know, back to Europe, whatever, back, try to get in Europe. So I had a couple of not offers, just talks with teams like Katusha, with Ekimov. He was like, you know, back in the days, a manager, and I talked with him a little bit, but the problem is, and the final, it was like a politics, they need to more Russians. I wasn't that, you know, and Androni offered me straight away 2 years contract, which like, all right, I need to get that contract first, because, you know, the problem is I'm not American, because that year we moved like me, Joe Roscoff, Chad Haga, Carter Jones, and someone else. We like that year we moved everyone in Europe. So of course, like Americans, they had like better opportunities to move like in World 2 teams straight away, because more interested from the teams. I was Romanian. I like, all right. Because a lot of times I beat those guys, you know, in time trials, in our GC, we was just like, you know, competing with each other, like, you know, top 10 guys always on every race. So, and I moved to Pro Conti teams. Those guys moved to like World Tour teams. And from Pro Conti team to move up, it's hard, you know. So I back in the days, that's US, it was a good platform to move from Conti teams straight to World Tour teams. That's a, you know, Amgen California. If you, you know, if you get top three on the stage straight away, you know, you have like, you know, okay, this guy could be like in World Tour teams. So that's a little bit politics as well. You know, I'm in the smaller countries, less interest, but still I had a great opportunity to race with Androni. The biggest races, Milan San Remo, whatever, Giro d'Italia, you know. Yeah, it was a great opportunity.
Well, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what was that like, racing a classic, racing the Giro?
Definitely is like the big, massive difference than US. So, for example, every year I had the opportunity to race Worlds, okay? So Worlds usually after Vuelta. So on Vuelta is just like guys, you know, after 3 weeks, on the best form, they race like, you know, that 6 hours waltz, it's no problem. For me, every year I get from, you know, US racing to waltz, and, you know, that, you know, from 4 hours to 6 hours is a big difference. I remember perfect, like Norway, you know, the group was just steady, 4 hours, 4 hours, 30 minutes, first attacks. And I see on my computer, I'm like, oh shit, my legs is done. You know, perfect, like, US racing. So so after 2 years with Androni, I noticed like, oh my gosh, you know, after 5 hours I can race right now, my legs is just totally different level. And first year, like, you know, big loads of whatever French classics or whatever 1.8c, also like Milan San Remo, like longest races, yeah, it's definitely a different level. And like normally, like, you know, like your body's changed after the Giro, like that's the best years after the Giro was in my experience.
So, okay. That's very interesting, because I've heard people talk about that before. Well, you feel like you felt that fitness for at least a year after doing a Grand Tour?
Yeah, definitely. I just was a different person. I'm going to say in training, because my training, just like the volume, I can hold like much bigger volume. You know, even like straight after Giro, like 2 months after, I'm like, oh, you know, already like 5 hours in, I'm like, oh, my time already, like mental thing, it was like, oh, just only 5 hours. It's like, and some push, like some intervals, no problem. Yeah, after, it was quite okay in Europe. I was kind of ready for another Giro, because we should get invitation for 2016, but unfortunately we, you know, didn't get something. So, yeah. And, but year after, like third year, I came back in US, I was flying. I was just like, you know, the same level of UHC by myself, you know, without any team. I was just like, all right, guys, on the stage race, not on the crates, on the stage race. Yeah.
So do you think part of that is the ment, like you said, after you're doing just super mega long days over and over and over again, it makes the 4 hour ride seem like nothing. I mean, do you think part of it is just the comparison of where you were before, or do you think it was physically something changes in you that just makes you, you know, oh, 5 hours in, I'm going to go do some intervals? Or maybe it's a combination of both.
I think it's a combination of both because, for example, my Giro was like the big stages, it was like in Grupetas, right? Nothing special. One day on stage five, I had like a breakaway for a long one. But pretty much everything in Grupetas, I wasn't be able to do something. But still, that level of fitness in US is just like massive, you know, massive. Mm-hmm. I think it's both.
Do you think you could do anything in training for, say you were in that position again, knowing what you know now, and you're like, okay, I'm going to be going to Worlds and I'm only doing 4 hour races. Could you simulate anything in training to help you better prepare for that? Or is it just, you got to do long races?
I think the best training is going to be a race. It's hard to simulate. For sure, the guys right now, the level which we can see in Peloton, some of the guys that they don't really race much, they came like just like flying, right? But be honest, I don't know. For me, I need races. Because, for example, the best result, it was third week. I don't know if you remember, but it was like Cascade. I think 1.5 weeks after it was Utah. And like third race in, I think, 5 days. And another week, it was Colorado, Jose Prochaska. That was the best race, like third week. I was just pretty much every time the people from Utah came to Colorado from World Tour teams. I remember I was flying. Of course, probably ability to race in altitude for me, it was much, you know, it was like advantage. But so far, I was just like feeling all right, third week, like incredible. So for me, it's hard to train probably the same.
Were you living at altitude then? Or why do you think that, why was the altitude an advantage for you?
You know, I found out through the races that I'm really good in altitude because in 2014 I signed with the Jelly Belly for second year. So I moved to Colorado because all the races like Tour of Gila, Utah, Cascade, everything in altitude, and it was a big sense to move in Colorado, right? So I moved here and find out like, for example, I raced even with Androni. Qinghai Lake is a tour of Qinghai Lake is like a big 10 or whatever, 11 days in China. It's a massive altitude gain, not gain. I would say some stages are going through like 4,000 meters. Okay. Yeah. Over 4,000 meters. Like big highways. Yeah. So I remember that perfect. Like I was just one guy who was in the group of 10 guys of Colombians, like Colombians, Venezuela, whatever, from like, I think I was like 72 kilos. Everyone was like 50 kilos. I was just one guy who was there and like no one else. I was just all right. Probably sometimes digest that oxygen or whatever, you know, ability to race in altitude doesn't really, you know, matter your weight. So I had that advantage, just like, all right, you know, I'm good in altitude. I'm not bad. So, yeah, I found out like, all right. And if you, you know, analyze my pro cycling stats, it's going to be all the best results in altitude. Nothing on sea level, nothing.
That's so interesting. When you then were coming back to the US and Androni dried up, were you disappointed at all? Were you excited to come back? What were you kind of feeling at that point?
You know, that point, the second year with Androni, I was with Egan Bernal. He was first year. We lived together. And I remember that was a team which tried to find, like, you know, young guys like Egan, Sosa, Ivan Sosa. So, and Gianni, this is the manager, Gianni Savio, is really famous in Europe. So he told me, like, hey, Sergey, you're a great teammate for the big team. For example, like a, you know, worker for the big team, like domestic guy. But unfortunately, we need to, you know, for your salary, we can get like 3 Colombians, you know. You're like, yeah, that's the situation. Probably it was like nice, you know, nice way to say no. But yeah, the thing is, that was like next year they signed Ivan Sosa, Kevin Rivera, all those bunch of, you know, South American guys, which they are really good, you know. And is, I think, as a business wise, is it was smart, you know, move. And
Yeah.
for me, it was hard to move up because, like, all right, I need to come back in US.
And then did you just reach out to Jelly Belly like, hey, I'm coming back. Let's do this again.
Yeah, definitely. Jelly Belly was like one of the greatest, you know, support team like through my whole career. And all, of course, you know, I was like and other teams was had interest in me, but I thought, like, yeah, me pretty much every team in county level, it was the same in US. Like, you know, I know those guys, I know the support. I was just happy to come back. Yeah. And I think year after 2018, I signed with UHC, United Healthcare.
Okay.
And it was 2017, it was massive year for me. I mean, I was just like perfect year. I won a stage in Colorado Classic back in the day, so right after USAPR Pro Challenge. Also, Utah third overall. Yeah, it was a bunch of good results, but I think like United Healthcare was a little bit different level. Of course, not little, but it was a different level pro conti. But unfortunately, yeah, they, you know, stopped and whatever. 1 year I spent with them. Was a great opportunity.
What's and then how do you look at like the last few years of kind of floating around like US cycling? You were on Floyd's, they're not here. And then did you go over to Malaysia? You were on a Malaysian team and then linked back up with wildlife, or how did that play out?
So 2020, COVID year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
2018, after Floyd stopped the team, I decided, like, I had a two options: just go with the wildlife generation or with Malaysian team, which I really want to try to race in Asia, because I had experience with UHC. I had experience with Jelly Belly. To race in Asia is incredible races, honestly. It's like good prize money, good terrain, you know, sometimes time trials. Great. I mean, definitely, I was just like, all right, you know, probably too late to move in Europe, but let's try in Asia. I signed with Malaysian team. We won Tour of Langkawi. I was one of the guy who just support the, you know, leader jersey through from stage four. And unfortunately, COVID happened and we stayed at home. So I was training, and the team just was like, I think Malaysia was really bad. You know, they like locked down really bad. So I was racing pretty much with my national team in Romania after August, I think so. So yeah, the year was just like, so.
So it seemed like over these years you've had, crit experience, Giro, doing a grand tour, you've kind of hit, big time trial success. What's a consistent thread in your training? Like, what's your bread and butter?
You know, I so before I start working with the power meter in 2014. No, 13.
Okay.
It's like first 2 months of training with the power meter, okay. My first results, I won time trial in Natural Valley. I think it was this, yeah, Natural Valley.
Yeah, up in Minnesota.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
I won by 7 seconds a national champion, Tom Zirbel. If
I
you heard
know
about him.
Zirbel.
Okay.
Yeah. I was out in Colorado. I used to be my coach then was
Okay.
buddies was Zirbel actually ended up working for Fast Cap, but he I think was an athlete back then. And yeah, Zirbeast.
Yeah.
So anyways, keep going.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He was like national champ that, you know, I think in the not rally, Optim back in the days.
Yeah.
So I beat him. That was big step for me. My yellow jersey, you know, with Jelly Belly, my first big results. And from there, when I started, like, you know, that system of training with a power meter, just totally different, changed. And the system, it was for me, it was kind of like, huh, something different, because the guy was I working with, I had like really short training, but always intervals, like VO2 intervals, just intervals. My training was just from intervals, nothing like more than 3 hours. And I'm gonna say that changed my, you know, my form and my level in US. But what I noticed when I moved in Europe for 2 years, that wasn't enough. those, you know, like 3 hours training, of course, you need to build, you know, to do something longer. But for US, it was perfect. The first thing, my training was like maximum 3 hours. I was just like, came back from 3 hours, around 3,000 kilojoules sometimes in the big efforts. And it was perfect for time trials. I mean, I was for a while a good time trial, and you know, a lot of results in the US was time trial. You know, road race, I need to use my, of course, brain for road race without any experience. You know, the watts doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But it was also success in road race as well with this type of trainings. And right now I notice I'm trying to race whatever to get in gravel right now. And I think I'm going to use this mix with a little bit longer, but definitely with the two kids, you know, the time just a little bit, you need to squeeze the time.
Less time.
Yeah, 2.5-3 hours is going to be enough.
So when you say every ride was intervals, you were doing
ride.
Every ride. How did you not like burn out from that? Or how did you even do it? You never rode endurance. You never just like went out and rode.
For example, I can tell you right what kind of intervals. It was like 3 days of cycle, 1 day off, but is it off? It was just like easy 1.5 hour ride, but still intervals. I had like 1 minute high cadence, around like, I don't know, 400 watts, and 5 minutes off. So five of those and day rest. Okay, kind of day rest. And that was my easiest day. But overall, like 3 days, just VO2 is like this, whatever, 5x5, 6x4, 7x3, some 220s right before. That was my day, okay? And basically, since I start working with the power meter, my routes of my road, just one climb. If you're gonna, you know, if you see my Strava, I have just one climb, which is like from 20 to whatever, 40 minutes climb, and up and down, up and down. Sometimes people just like, okay, you're not tired? They're like, you know, I get used to it already. Sometimes for me, if I do a loop, you know, somewhere nice places to see whatever new climbs, I feel mental is useless. I didn't get anything from that training, but this is mental thing, of course.
Yeah.
But no, I was fine.
Did you enjoy that?
You know, when I saw results on the races, yes, of course.
Interesting.
But it's hard. But the thing is, it's so calculated because I knew every day how many kilojoules I'm going to spend, how many, you know, taking calories I can, you know, calories out, calories in, whatever, with my feeding. I was just perfect, you know, just like I knew every corner, I knew like every meter of my training. And that was like my days, it was just pretty fast until like the race. Okay, the race is a result. Okay, why not? I need to keep doing that thing.
So which gravel events do you think you want to do this year?
So hopefully, it's hard right now because I'm still trying to find the whatever support. Unfortunately, for sure you read or something, I got diagnosed in 2021 with chronic leukemia, mm-hmm. right? So blood cancer, but luckily, you know, it's under control. So it's not curable, but it's pretty treatable. So I have kind of project in my mind, you know, to inspire the people and, you know, with mental help and everything, because I see in the groups with the same disease is like crazy. Like it's definitely, it's different story. We can like do another podcast probably about that. But try to get support right now, like gravel bikes, like whatever, something, you know, to get, but for sure after June, I'm focusing to do whatever as much as possible. Because right now, you know, like I don't have any team right now. So like, of course, in US, you need to pay your bills somehow. So first six, like until June, I'm a little bit busy with the, you know, I have like kind of part-time job. But so far, I want to focus on gravel and to try to get that as a good platform to talk about that story, to, you know, to try to invite you know, the people to support that thing, because you know, sometimes like healthy people, they're like, oh, we're healthy, we don't, but you know, in one moment, like, oh, you know, what happened? Yeah, you have something, you have disease, and you need to fight with it. And I think, yeah, that's the situation right now.
So is the treatment that you're going under, it's you can like put out normal power again? And because I had read that article where it was like, you know, that's how you realized you were just riding, didn't feel good, riding kind of like crap. And you're like, something's not right.
Exactly. That's how I discovered thing. Like I told everyone, like if I was like a normal, you know, normal guy, which, you know, don't really, you know, see the power or everything, just doing normal job. For sure, I didn't, you know, see that, you know, the difference. But as soon I, after my crash, I get my surgery. After the surgery, after 6 weeks, my blood start changing a little bit, and I start keep training. But unfortunately, my power was just like, oh, wait a second, something wrong. I'm already lean. I'm already, you know, try to do all my intervals, but my power like 30, almost 40% lower than normally. Something wrong. And I get like more investigation, just like, hey, you know, what's going on? Like slowly, like took me probably 8 months until my diagnosis, you know. Yeah. And after 8 months, I just like, all right. Because, you know, the weird thing, it was when you don't know what's going on with you, that's the weird thing. Because someone tell like, hey, don't worry, you're fine. And someone tell like, you have something bad. And that between, like, hey, guys, just tell me like bad or nothing special, right? And as soon as I knew that diagnosis, I'm like, all right, looks like, you know, I need to next step, what I'm gonna do next. So yeah,
what were you thinking over those 8 months? Because that's, I think I hear that, and if this was going on for a month and my power was all off 40%, it's like, okay, something's weird. And but to have to go through that for 8 months, like, were you freaking out, or were you like, something, how did you, where was your head at during that?
You know, the first thing, like, all right, maybe I'm recovering still from the crash, collarbone, but I know a lot of people from, you know, surgery, like next day they're racing, you know, no problem. Me like, oh, all right. So I raced Tour of Turkey. I was in a breakaway, but still not know my level. My power is not there. And that's the thing, like my team just kept going, you know, Wildlife Generation was just like another races. I'm like, hey guys, something wrong still. And I remember the first race when I said, no guys, I'm not going to go. That was Tour of Portugal. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, I came back in Colorado. I get my blood test, and my blood test, you know, I saw my, the first really big sign, it was like super premature cells in my blood. That was like 99%. I had really bad something. And then the team called me like, hey, Sergey, are you going to come? I'm like, no, guys, probably not. I need to go further my investigation. So after that, you know, I in Romania, I started investigation. And I started with my team, Tour of Romania, which was a great race, you know, in my hometown, kind of home race, with my team. And after first stage, I stopped and I got my results back, which like during the race, and my results was positive with like, hey, you have a blood cancer. And I just like, all right, I just told the guys like, hey guys, see you later. I just leaving you guys. And that was that moment like, oh my gosh, my guy's racing, I get that diagnosis, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. Terrible.
How do you feel now?
You know, mentally with it. Mentally much better. First thing, of course, you know, when you on a schedule, like every year you try to find a contract, you know, the full-time job, like you know, your cycling pays your bill, my bills or whatever. But this year is kind of interesting because like I don't get the team. I don't really even try to find a team first. I try to get with my, you know, project. Well, it's not project, I would say, with my thing, like a privateer with a gravel. But unfortunately, the cycling world right now is like in a big hole, you know. And of course, I'm talking right now with a non-cycling, companies. It's definitely is a different a little bit different, but mental is fine. My, you know, my wife, my family supports me. Also, when I start treatment, my power came back. So last year I was flying, be honest. I was flying. I almost, and it's not almost, I came to my normal watts, you know. For sure, I don't really knew like how I'm going to feel during the stage race, because I tried to prepare for myself for the crits, because I was on the crit league. And I don't really, you know how, you know, it's going to be. But for gravel, I think, you know, I want to try to do that. For sure, it's not going to be like results wise, but still, I would like to continue because I'm really motivated to ride my bike. But we'll see.
So are you racing with Above and Beyond this year at all?
Yes, I signed with those guys. I should go like for the training camp, but I was in Europe. And hopefully Tour of Hill is going to be my first race with them. But we decided like to go. I decided, and we had a conversation with them to go. I will be with them on the road. To try to, you know, to share my experience with the young guys, and also, you know, with my mission. And but I'm still kind of free for gravel, so we that I can go like with the gravel with my own stuff. So yeah.
So would you, I'm assuming it's not coincidence that you're on that team. Was that like, was the cancer connection part of, or was it just like a young team that, and it happens to be having a related sort of theme?
No, you know, the thing is, I think is one of the reason I reached them, that was like a cancer thing, because I think what they tried to do, like, the, you know, the sponsor, whatever, Above and Beyond Foundation, I think this is a great thing. And I would like to be involved with that thing to help, not to help, just to be involved with that thing too, because it's the same people like me right now in the same positions, right? And if I can ride the bike, just like, you know, combine with both, you know, bike team and whatever they do, I think this is the perfect combination.
Very cool. So when you were kind of talking about maybe doing, you were on more of a crit team before, and now you're going to be getting into gravel, and you had said that you would do sort of that 3-hour interval sessions and maybe try and mix in some long rides. Do you see any other big differences with training for crits versus training for gravel or a road?
You know, the thing is, I noticed I raced in my life twice gravel, Belgian Waffle. First, it was San Marcos. Of course, that it was like 2017. It was after Amgen, California. So we finished today Amgen, California. And next day at 6 morning, I started Belgian Waffle. So it was stage 8. Okay. So we drove from Santa Barbara to San Marcos. So we built our bikes. It was terrible night, but I finished third, okay? With the tubes and 25 millimeters tires. I finished third. Okay.
Dang.
Let's see. Let's
That's say, a flex right there.
Exactly. Let's say that was like stage 8. I was be able, you know, to do like 5-6 hours, no problem. Next, it was 2021, right before I crashed. It was Belgian Waffle in Cedar City in Utah. I finished 8th, but of course it was, you know, I'm roadie. As soon as we hit the sandy section, I just stuck there. I just walk. It was like a thing. We left like in 10 people with the big boys, like Peter Stetner. I think he won, like big boys there on gravel. Okay. That's ability. I don't really realize how to ride my bike on the sand. I was all right. Ciao, ciao. So I finished still 8th. And with the same type of training which I've done for, you know, for years with whatever 2.5-3 hours, it was enough. So I think, yeah, maybe it should be enough. I told you, like, it's not gonna be, you know, results wise, but for sure, right. I would like to. I'm still competitive, right? Even I have whatever I have, but still competitive. And for sure, I will try to go for results, but if not, I'm still okay.
Yeah. Very cool. What's of those sessions, what are your favorites that stick out?
You know, be honest, I hate those super, like, so my ability always, like, I don't have force in my legs. I'm always on a high cadence. If you see my cadence on time trial, this is like over 110 plus, always.
Whoa.
The thing is, the gears, as soon as I put like smaller gear, like whatever, you know, 53, I don't know, whatever, even 55, 13 or whatever, 14, 16 even, there's no way I can, you know, I'm always on a cadence. And that's my problem. I always try to do like some force, you know, up climbs, just like low gears. That's my worst. And high intense as well. I think it's kind of medium, like 5 minutes is fine, 3 minutes is fine, four is worse. I don't know. It's hard to say.
That's so interesting. I'm trying to think of who was on before and we were talking about like the 4 minute interval like sucks. It's like just go shorter at 3 minutes and harder or longer in five and we're like forget four. God, who was that? That's so funny that you bring that up.
Yeah, that was he sprints as well. I'm not a sprinter and I lost after Giro, I lost my sprint. Like from my barely 1200 watts, I can push like 1,000 maybe.
Yeah, Sergey's not going for the sprint then, that's for sure. No. Did you do any gym work?
No, I should probably do core exercise but not gym, but I've done before gym. I don't do
just not for you.
Yeah, well, I gained so much weight so easy. I don't know why. But probably, you know, food and, you know, some water gain. I don't know. I hate that afterwards when I need to lose that thing. I hate.
Yeah, losing weight is the worst.
Because one year I start swimming like every second day. I was just massive. Just like, oh my gosh. You know, it's just like 5 kilos plus. Nothing really helped me.
So what would you change about yourself as a rider if you could just make something better?
It's a good question. Change my it's hard to say, to be honest. For sure some situation during my career, yes, but yeah.
So, what about then? What do you think would have taken you farther if you had, what attribute were you maybe missing, do you feel like?
I think ability to be consistently like for sure, always, like, you know, the trend of the food intake, that's like the guy, especially like me, let's talk about like FTP, right? If it exists, it doesn't exist. Let's say about the number FTP. Doesn't really change from winter to my whatever summer, but my weight changed much. Okay, so if I'm early like season, I'm 75. And middle of the season when my peak form is 70 kilos, right? That's probably was my the problem, like all my career, the problem of food, of course. But my all result, it was from July, August, September, all my the best results, all my the best results. But sometimes like the strategics to sign the contract, you should, you know, spring, you should, you know, show yourself in spring. And that was always my problem, because a lot of guys already, you know, in spring, they showed something like a little bit rest in summer and end of the year. That's like a little bit strategy. But I think nutrition wise, I'm going to say, you know, it could be like really changeable because I tried everything like keto, non-keto, whatever, you know, and be honest, like for me, it works perfectly. High carbs, I lost the most weight and it was like slower. But the most quality and the most quality results, I got that thing. That's from my experience. Probably like nutrition wise, training wise, I don't know. Be honest, if I had like a good schedule, like back in 2014, the schedule was perfect. You know, to focus for results, and if you need to resign your contract end of the year, I always had that in my pocket. You know.
What do you think led to the what created the weight gain, the 5 kgs? Was it just like, oh, it's winter, there's no racing, I don't have to like really watch what I'm doing? Or,
you know, That's the thing. You relax. You just like the worst thing when I lost a lot of weight in Italy. I remember I tried to prepare for Giro 2016. I lost a lot, pretty fast too. And after I was benched like crazy. I gained like, I don't know, it's like back those, 5 kilos really quick as well. But the terrible like mental thing was terrible. I think a lot of, endurance athletes, they have that problem. Because sometimes you see the guys, they so like the same level, but they don't gain weight because genetically, right? Sometimes they like don't really even gain weight. They lean like whole season and they eat everything. Like Egan Bernal back in the days, I remember him. He came from Colombia to Italy. It was like, cereal, like prosciutto, like all those croissants, like all, he like full gas. On the team control of the pinch, he's like, hey, you're underweight. You're underweight. You need to gain some little bit weight. Be like, dude, he eats a lot. I mean, not a lot. I would say like a lot of stuff, which not proper, but he's still lean, And some, those guys just like another level.
Yeah.
And we struggle with that, right? So.
When you mentioned that your threshold power would stay the same during winter through the year, were you still doing like hard ride? Do you train like pretty hard all year long? Or, because I think some people have, if they go like more old school, like just endurance base, they see the threshold drop mostly because they're just not training it at all. What were you kind of all year, or how does it stay the same?
No, usually in October, I took like 3 weeks off. Just do nothing. I mean, do nothing. Just like whatever, with the family or whatever. Maybe, sometimes swimming pool, sometimes gym, really rare. But overall, don't really focus on that. But the thing is, for example, in December, we had like a test. In Androni, we had a test or test myself. My power doesn't really know. Probably the difference it was winter and summer. Like in summer, I can do that after, I would say, 4 hours, whatever, 3.5 hours. In winter, I can do a meal more fresh, but that was the difference. But the same number.
Got it. So with all these, you've talked about so many different races. What's the one, is there one like just mega memory that maybe you'll still be talking about when you're 60 and it's like, oh man, back in my racing, this was the race or a trip, or I just feel like you've got to have something from all these travels you've been on.
Yeah, I mean, even I raced a lot. I think it's USA Pro Challenge 2014. That was an incredible year, which is going to be forever in my mind. I mean, in my memories, because I finished 3 times 3rd in 3 different terrain: sprint, time trial, and mountain climb finish. And that's the first, my result was when I was, between the guys like, TJ Van Garderen, Rafa Mike, whatever around, like Tom Danielson, like from there to superstars guys, I was between them. Like that was probably the first step up and the first when, and I'm going to remember that forever.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received?
Best piece of advice. Let me think about that. That's quite a question. A lot of advice, to be honest. And I had.
That maybe said differently? Is there any like mantras that you have, or anything that just like you think of often that keeps you going?
I really had a great start with like Freddy Rodriguez. He was a guy who was in my team in Exergy first and second. I think here we moved together in Jelly Belly. And that guy told me a lot of stuff, which is like more mental thing, just like athlete wise. Hey, and you can be able to be there and that, to do that, just need to trust yourself and to use opportunities when it's opportunity, right? So sometimes even right now, the younger people, they ask me some advice or something, I'm gonna tell them, like I'm always telling them, hey, just use your opportunity. Do not waste your opportunity, right? Because sometimes you think, I have another year, or whatever, contract of another year. Yes. But the same thing is going to be another year. And like the third year, you're not going to have contract and you wasted that opportunity, right? If you, of course, you need to be balanced, because right now, cycling, I think, so focused, because right now, even I talked with my ex-teammate and right recently, a couple of weeks ago, he was a teammate with Peter Sagan, who was my teammate, Oscar Gatto. He told me, like, hey, cycling changed right now is a lot. Like, everything calculated, everything, like, so focused, just, like, crazy. Like, and it started already, I think, from Team Ineos, whatever, Sky back in the days when they, you know, properly work. Like, that's example in Amgen, California. I remember, like, hey, Egan, he won that Amgen. And we talk together in the peloton. You're like, hey, Egan, how is the team? Like, hey, it's a nice team. Everything's so calculated. Every morning we wake up, we have like a blood pressure measurements. We have like whatever measurements. For me, it's fine. I'm 20, whatever plus years old. But this guy, and he showed me in the front, it was standard. You remember that? I think Jan Standard is like the guy, is a big guy. He's classic, totally. From UK. And he was already like 30, almost 40 years old. And he showed me like, hey, but this guy probably don't like that thing, because he's more old school, you know. And I think that the cycling nowadays has changed a lot. If you, as soon as you're in the way for that thing, you be in that system, you know, of everything so strict, and it's hard to advise something which is, I'm old school, you know, more old school.
That's really interesting to hear Egan talk that way. And yeah, Stannard is beast mode. I remember watching him in Tour of Britain, some great races back in like 2016. What do you think, opportunity-wise, what opportunity do you think is in front of you that you're trying to take advantage of this year in 2024?
You know, be honest, I would like to stay on my bike as long as possible, but at the same time to build that, you know, to build that thing which is like more like a mental help for the people, which is, it doesn't matter, like, for example, my disease is super rare, you know. I just ask about like statistics, like almost like 60,000 people has this disease.
Wow.
That's, I told you, like, I won another lottery. You can't say there's a lottery, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I would like to spread that word and to invite, you know, the people, for example, like Oleg Tinkov. I don't know if you heard about him.
Yeah.
So I talked with him. I had like a conversation with him, because, for example, if people in sport, they can, you know, they can share their experience, how they react to that disease, how family reacted, what they do for that, how they continue a sport, right? I think around the people, even the healthy, because sometimes, like, you know, a lot of mental problems people has, like, without having, they're healthy, right? And they're like, oh my gosh, this is biker so bad. I don't know. Man, look at that guy at Paralympics. They don't have legs. They don't have hands. They still racing. They don't give a shit, nothing, you know? And I think that's the thing, to build that platform, to invite more athletes, because if you, I mean, I realize like a lot of athletes has that disease. I mean, not a lot, but like, you know, baseball players, like basketball players, like Greg LeMond has the same. You know, I think everyone can, you know, share that. And I'm looking for, you know, first step is going to be gravel, because of a big platform to spread the word, you know, about that. And I hopefully can find someone, or, you know, some opportunity to talk with another people, and people another share that experience, you know. And that's, I would say, of course, like, I'm an athlete, I'm still competitive, I try to compete, but at the same time, it's not the big goal, you know, it's not the biggest goal to be, but the bike is a good tool.
I feel like you'll still be smashing some people. So it's, keep those goals up there. I mean, man, it's going to be awesome to see when you hit the gravel and get everything rolling. I'm sure you'll figure that pathway out. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, man. Is anything else you want to hit on before we close out?
No, really, really, I appreciate it about you. You know, thank you very much for everything. What you're doing is great stuff. I mean, I'm really enjoying. And yeah, thanks for everything. And hope talk to you soon, maybe another episode.
Yes. And what's the, my last question, actually, what's the best way for people to keep up with you besides Instagram? I'll post that. Do you blog or anything else going on social media?
Definitely. I'm thinking, and I'm still, I mean, I probably are going to, you know, start the YouTubing. What's the okay. blog thing? Yeah, that's the going to be like the way to keep
up. And yeah. Strava, probably.
And Strava, yeah.
Cool. Sergey, thank you so much. Everybody, make sure to give him a follow on Instagram. We'll post a link in the show notes. Good luck with your training and racing. We'll talk to you guys soon.